The all-new 2026 Soccer Pick'em is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. Make picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. Play solo, create a private group with friends, join a public group to play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group and see if you can beat us. Join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. Hi, hello. We have a fun bonus episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. The WNBA season is underway. We didn't get to do an awards prediction or have that kind of conversation heading into the regular season, so we're doing that now while it's still early. We talk about some of our top candidates and dark horse candidates for the major individual awards. A lot of candidates, a lot of names listed, a lot of fun conversation. We hope you tap in with us. Hi, hello, and welcome to a special edition of the Dunker Spot. We're part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are we doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Let's do that jazz.
Let's do that jazz indeed, Steve. So we have WNBA regular season action tipping off already. We got two, maybe three games in the docket already. We didn't get to do like a preseason awards thing on Friday to lead into the regular season, so we're doing that now while it's still early enough in the season. We were able to gain some clues from the first couple of games, but ultimately this is still just an, you know, just kind of a general look ahead. We're going to be checking in on these award races throughout the year. We wanted to have some fun, talk through who some of the early candidates for these awards may be. So we start with the big one. We start with MVP, and before we get into some of our early like favorites or names that we're looking at, Steve, I wanted to ask you generally, especially for our newer listeners or YouTube watchers, how do you generally approach MVP or the MVP discussion as the year evolves?
I mean, when we're talking about the MVP, I like to build a long list at the start and kind of whittle down as things go on. So I think you have to perform at a high enough level. Your team does have to have a level of success, and what's your importance to your team? What's your contribution? How are you lifting them up in a way that is completely outstanding? Are you producing at a level that is undeniable on both ends? And that's kind of where I go. So for me, part of the fun of doing this very early, while it may seem silly, is just, okay, what are the pathways? Who could potentially be on this list? What could happen? What could alter things? And so if you kind of have a base at the start with a longer list, as the season goes on, you kind of knock people down. And so, okay, maybe I thought this was a hot start. Hasn't necessarily turned out as well. The play's gone down, the record's gone down, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's kind of where I'm at. It's an adventure, but I think if you do it the right way and you are consistent with your thought process, like even last year, it was like, okay, Asia Wilson is playing very well. The Aces are not winning. This may not be Asia Wilson's year. There is one path for Asia Wilson to win MVP. Path occurs. Yep.
Angel went to the gets. So, okay. Yeah, very holistic way to look at it. So, what get your thoughts on that front? For me, like similar to you, it's just going to be a mix of like strong box score, strong efficiency. You want to have the impact. Like, when it comes to some of the other data, like, I do love some of the, like the on off or just general on court rating. Like, how good is your team when you're on the floor? Like, that is most important to me. But as we've seen with like Asia Wilson last year, where they were very good with her on the court, they fell off a cliff with her off the court. On the NBA side, Nikola Jokic always seems to have that split. Like, those kind of things can be loud as well. So, like, monitoring that portion of the program. And as you mentioned, like, there is just a level of team success that you have to get yourself in these conversations versus, like, the all-W teams, for example. So, I want to get that out of the way first. Well, let's get into some of these MVP candidates. I think there's generally a big four for me every year. Is going to be a big three for me this year because Nafisa Collier is out to begin the season, slated to begin, I think, basketball activities in June. I feel like June 15th is kind of like the cutoff date for any sort of MVP candidacy for her, because if she comes back later than that, I think she maxes out at like 29 games or fewer, and that just puts her behind the eight ball. But for me, I start with the players that are, one, very good at basketball, are on teams that should be good this season, and are the undisputed or mostly undisputed best player on their team. There's no kind of splitting between who's most impactful. So for me, you start with Asia Wilson, as she just won the award last year and has won multiple throughout her career. I think Breonna Stewart as your New York Liberty rep, especially with Sabrina Ionescu being out to begin the season, I think she'd probably be the Liberty rep heading into the season. Alyssa Thomas is just always going to be in these conversations. So like, that's like my basic three in terms of early favorites heading into the season. And then the fourth name that I would add, well, that also fits the criteria. Oh, go ahead.
Well, hold on. Before you get to the fourth name, this is where it gets interesting. I think this is a interesting MVP year, potentially. Like, there are stalwarts who are always going to be in this conversation in theory because of their contribution. So Asia Wilson will always be in the discussion because at the end of the day, she is the discussion with what she does on both ends of the floor. That's just what it is. Like, if you have a problem with it, I'm so sorry. You got to sit down. The Liberty rep thing gets very interesting because I think if the Liberty have success, there will be a rep. The split could get funny sometimes, but generally with what Stewie does on a nightly basis on both ends of the floor, it kind of ends up tilting that way because of her importance defensively and offensively. When it's the way she started, for the most part, Portland wasn't a fun game for Stewie, but it's hard to deal with that kind of presence. And then Alyssa Thomas being the engine for the Mercury and being able to be impactful in so many different ways on both ends of the floor and being aggressive to start this season, always kind of being in consideration. Who emerges to knock things off? What team wins a little bit more than people expected? How does that kind of influence or change things mentally? Because there's no, and like, obviously, if he could come back and just be Fee again, and we could have a different discussion. But in theory, as of right now, there's no DeFisa Collier for at least a month, maybe more.
Yeah.
So who is going to fill the void, fill the gap? There's always a team that plays well. There's always a player that emerges. So that's where I had a lot of fun just thinking of, okay, who could fill that? Who could be that person?
Yeah.
So before you get into the splits or the additional names, I wanted to lay it out there.
No, I think that's fair. And I think to that end, a player that could emerge to kind of fill the Fee void and kind of join to make this a big four also slots into the there's no question about who the best player on this team is. And if the team is good, she's just going to warrant MVP votes, I would imagine. And that is Paige Beckers of the Dallas Wings. Like, completely ramped, new coach. Revamped the offensive system. We saw what it looked like against the Indiana Fever. We saw what it looked like in spurts against the Atlanta Dream last night. Ultimately didn't win that game. But Paige was an all-W talent last year. I would project she's going to be that this year. And again, if the Wings go from way out of the playoffs to we are now the 5 seed, it's likely going to be off the strength of what Paige Beckers puts together. And so, like, she feels like, I think it's a big three, and then she's kind of like dark horse candidate if I'm splitting it that way. But in terms of this overall undisputed number one on a potentially good team, I think Paige fits that void. She'd probably be like my top candidate to kind of fill that Fee opening right now.
All right. Got a lot of responsibility on both ends of the floor. So I think it's going to take consistency. It's going to take Dallas winning in that area. But if those things happen, I think you definitely have an argument for sure. Because of just the ability to kind of play on ball, off ball, that just kind of dictate terms, the aggression we've seen at the start of the season, I think defensively gets slept on a little bit. So I would not be surprised if Dallas has success, Paige ends up being talked about in different ways than people expected. But who else could emerge is where this gets funny, because there is the Indiana Fever. And if the Indiana Fever have success and win, going to be some question marks about Caitlin Clark and her impact and her ability to dominate things offensively to a degree. So if the Fever win, she has success. Is that a name that you're thinking about?
It is. Like, I think she is going to, I think she's going to permeate this conversation quite a bit as the season goes on. For me, I didn't have her in like this top group. I had this kind of section off as like the undisputed number ones and then the split zone. I think we both kind of have the mind of there are some very good players in the league that are also playing with some very talented teammates to where, like you alluded to a little bit earlier, there's generally like a Liberty split, at least early in the year before Stewie ends up just winning it out. For the Indiana Fever, you have Caitlin Clark. Kelsey Mitchell just made the All-W first team last year. And you also have Aaliyah Boston, who I feel like this is going to feel like a hot take. I don't think enough people are giving credence to the argument that Aaliyah Boston may just be the best player on this team with what she does on both ends of the floor. And so if we're talking about potential MVP candidates there and where there may be like a split on the team, I think Caitlin versus Aaliyah could be interesting this year. In light of what Aaliyah's asked to do offensively with her self-creation, the spacing, the playmaking, the screening that helps unlock Caitlin on and off the floor on top of that, and then the responsibility that she has defensively, I think she's going to have a strong case. She had strong on-offs last year, if you care about that kind of thing. And to Caitlin's case, kind of speaks for itself with her blend of shot creation and I guess just creation overall. Like, we go back to that 2024 season where she was rookie of the year, all W first team, top five MVP finisher, et cetera. I think she led the W in terms of total points created. When you're looking at the scoring plus the points generated off of assists as well. So, like, I'm curious to see, like, how that dichotomy gets talked about this year if we get a healthy campaign from Caitlin and more growth from Aaliyah Boston. But I can imagine there being some splitting there, and there's some other pairings as well. But I'll toss that to you. Like, how do you feel about Aaliyah or Kelsey Mitchell, for that matter, maybe cutting into some of the Caitlin case?
Well, I mean, I think it just depends on what they are able to contribute on a nightly basis. And it gets interesting because of the impact that all of them have on this team. And so for me, the overall thing, as we kind of went through this exercise, was, okay, there are teams that are going to have success. There are teams that are going to win. Who gets, quote unquote, the credit as the MVP? And so my mind, it's easy to talk about the Fever because they have that much talent. The Atlanta Dream are poised to be a very good team this year. If the Atlanta Dream are the team that says we're the 2 seed, we're the 1 seed, we're having more success than you thought, who gets the credit for that? Is it going to be Ali Chagray for the two-way impact? Is it going to be Ryan Howard? How do we kind of dissect that? Because if the Dream were to win at a high level, I would imagine there would be a rep. Who would it be?
Mm-hmm. Like, last year, that answer was Ali Chagray coming off the best season of her career. And so, like, I'm inclined to say, like, it's probably her again. But Ryan Howard put together her first all-defense candidacy last season. From what we've seen in the early goings of the season, I'm not going to be surprised if she adds another selection to the toolkit. And if we see the offensive efficiency perk up at all for Ryan, it's a weird kind of dichotomy in Atlanta to where, like, I think Alicia has been or slash is their best player, but Ryan is still, like, the face of the franchise as the former number one overall pick, and they just kind of build a boat around her. Like, I think there is a pathway for her to just get that push if she puts together, like, a true high-level two-way impact season, and she clearly has the talent to do that. And so, like, that split can get fun, to your point.
Hey, let's play small sample theater real quick.
Okay.
Angel Reese is averaging 15 rebounds, 2 blocks, a steal and a half, and 11.5 points. If the points go up and the Dream play well, say she's at 15-15, hypothetically, and the defense is where it's at. Is there a conversation to be had? Would that be a knock on the door moment?
I think for me, it would depend on, like, how much playmaking usage she gets, first and foremost. I think it's been kind of up and down in terms of the overall usage for her offensively. And then I have to see, like, where the scoring efficiency lands. Because I think if you're comparing, like, can she be the Atlanta rep? I think there's a pathway for her to be so. If she is, like, clear depoy, and we're going to get there a little bit later. If she's clear depoy and then plus positive impact offensively, and I think there's a pathway for her to get there. Like, I don't know if I would, like, bet on that being the case in light of how good Alicia and Ryan are. But, like, I think there is a pathway to get there. It just feels a little steep for me. Mm.
Understood.
That's fair.
Another team I was thinking about and pondering about and wondering about. What if the Los Angeles Sparks are able to kind of spark things up to a degree? Are we talking about the hashtag MV Plum, or are we talking about the impact of NECA and Gwumike and lifting this team up on both ends of the floor? Where do we land there?
That part, I was thinking about that earlier. Like, I really don't know how that would go. Because, obviously Kelsey is incredibly good, and she's going to have the ball in her hands more. But, like, we are fresh off of multiple all-W campaigns for NECA in Seattle. Like, she is still very much a monster on both ends of the floor. And on the nights in which she feels like taking 17 or 18 shots, there aren't many players in the league that can deal with her. I don't know if her role is going to require that kind of offensive or at least that kind of scoring output. But it is going to be interesting because, like, the Sparks missed the playoffs last year. If they make it this year, and NECA is NECA, like, it's going to be easy to kind of connect those dots. Like, she was the piece that helped them jump into the next tier of teams. So, like, I would probably be inclined to say NECA gets the nod, but I don't want to be disrespectful to, like, what Kelsey Plum is and what her role on that team is.
Hey, the game's about a bucket, and let me tell you who's a bucket. Kelsey Plum. That's all I know. So, sure hey. So throwing it out there, knocking on the door. Another team I was considering. Okay. Let's say the Chicago Sky rise to the occasion and fly high in the Windy City.
Okay.
Let's talk about Skylar Diggins. It feels like Skylar would get the credit there, no? Because she's unlocked in Chicago.
Yeah, if the game against the Portland Fire was any indication of what this can look like and how she can make life easier for everyone, in addition to her own scorings, yeah, like, that would be a fun late career Skylar top 5 MVP finish type beat. Now, I think when you I think in a vacuum, like, yes, you could see like how Skylar would be the Skyler up in the conversation. It would then become Skylar season versus like Asia's versus Alyssa Thomas's versus Breonna Stewart. So like pathway to winning, I'll have to see like what the overall impact is, what the box score is. Like if this is like 19-8 in a steal and a half high efficiency type beat, the Skylar the 5 seed is like, well, hold on. You know what I mean? If this is Skylar has the similar impact, but it's like 16-6, it helps the Sky win, but you're still going to be comparing those box scores and the impact to like, again, Asia, Alyssa, Stewie, whoever the Fever rep is, et cetera, et cetera. So like it gets a little tougher for there. But like I like the Skylar shout in general, because I think, again, like the Wings, I think, should have a pretty big wins jump from last year. The Sky should have a pretty big wins jump from last year. The Sparks should be in the playoff picture at the minimum. And so like those kind of cases are going to be very interesting as the season progresses. So I'm curious about that one. Did you have any other like dark horses that you were considering before we move on?
My last wild card, I will not hit the Toronto button today, but just know it's coming, potentially.
Oh, okay.
This just prepping you for the future.
You know, I Golden State thank Valkyrie. You for the warning.
Golden State Valkyries.
Oh,
playing at a high level, very good defensively. Okay. And again, before you yell at me on the internet, we are building a list and having fun at the start of the season. What if Golden State is the 1 seed in theory? Who would get that credit? Would it be Gabby Williams? Would it be Veronica Burton? Would it be Janelle Salon if Janelle Salon continues to decide I'm not going to miss any shots? What would that look like? How much winning would Golden State have to do to get a rep?
I think to get like a legitimate top 5 finish, like they would kind of have to be top 3, I think. If for no other reason than because, like, I don't know if they're going to have, I say this, like, I don't know if they're going to have, like, the box score production from, like, one of the MVP candidates. It'll very much be, like, Veronica Burton is, like, top 5 in, like, some impact metrics. But, like, the box score may trail behind. Like, I feel like I view that kind of similar to, like, a potential Skylar Diggins case, to where the impact may be undeniable, but, like, her box score compared to, like, Asia's, top tier, is going to be a little bit tough. If I had to guess between the two, I think Veronica Burton is just going to have the ball in her hands more. There's just going to be more, like, playmaking usage in general. And so, like, I would probably lean more Veronica Burton over Gabby Williams if they end up having a rep this season. But that is a fun one. And I think, in general, what I would like about their cases, potentially, is, like, you would kind of have to index more on defense than what is historically done when it comes to like guards in MVP races or perimeter players in general in MVP races. So like I would enjoy that aspect of like if you're building the case around Veronica Burton or Gabby Williams, you're going to have to talk about them being all defense first team and like what that does to help this Valkyries team succeed. So like I like the potential of something like that as like a dark horse run.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of defense, talk to me about what you're thinking about with Defensive Player of the Year. I will confess to the internet, to anyone listening or watching, however you may be consuming this, I abstained. In the doc that we did pre-show, my list for Defensive Player of the Year said, good luck, exclamation point, because we have seen one, two, maybe three games, and it's been a point of emphasis trial that please tell me it's ending. Please. For the love of everything, holy. Please tell me it's ending. And I'm not even a ref person. Let's just not knock it off. Where are you leaning, Defensive Player of the Year, early on, guys?
Well, similar to the MVP discussion, like there is generally like a top 4 for these kind of things. And it's generally Asia, Alyssa Thomas, Breonna Stewart, and Nafisa Collier for me, if we're going off the last 2 or 3 seasons. Obviously, again, Nafisa Collier is going to be out for the first month or so. And again, if she is not back by June 15th, I would say, you're looking at a max of 29 games played for Fee, which is just puts her behind the 8 ball for award stuff this year. And so, like, heading in, like, Asia was co-defensive player of the year last year. Alyssa Thomas should have a defensive player of the year award already. But I think she is going to once again anchor a strong defense in Phoenix. For the small samples that we have in terms of like tracking data and stuff earlier on this year, her pick and roll defense numbers are already just kind of stupid complimentary. Alyssa Thomas, like, teams just do not score when they put her in action. So like that is happening again. And then Breonna Stewart, just the all encompassing, I will defend a point guard to take drives off the table. I will defend fours and throw that for a loop. I will switch. I'll be at the level. I will just be incredibly rude. And so, like, she's just always going to be in these conversations.
Rotations.
How you feel about those rotations? And so, like, Asia, Lizzie Thomas, Breanna Stewart, in whatever order you want to put them in, like, those are my early favorites heading into this season. Mm-hmm. And okay. for DPOY, like, that is generally, like, a full, you know, big forward slash center award anyway, much to the chagrin of other folks. But, like, that is generally how it goes. So those would be my early favorites. Now, thinking through some of the dark horses, and, like, we do have every year at least one or two guards that really pop in the discussion. May not in ultimately win it, but there's always one that is like, hey, holy crap, this is the person we are giving the love to. Like 2024, that was DeJounte Carrington. Last year, that was Gabby Williams. And so I was thinking about, like, who could be the guard or the wing that kind of pops in this. Naturally, I think Gabby Williams should be back in the discussion, and I think that bleeds back in too. If the Valkyries get an MVP rep, would Gabby Williams' defense help her become that Valkyries rep? And then we have a broader conversation from there. So I think Gabby Williams is going to be in this again. Ryan Howard is someone that I'm keeping an eye on. Again, all defense for the first time last season. The multitude of positions she can defend and the multitude of roles that she can operate in as a wing, it's a very short list of perimeter players that can do what she does when she is fully locked in. And so, like, I don't think it's out of the question that she builds on what she did last year. And it's now an all W, you know, it's all defense first team case for her, and thus some fringe DPOY love. So we'll see what happens on that front. The other name I want to toss out, and this is largely, one, I think she's good at defense when she doesn't have to do a whole bunch of stuff offensively. Two, the early returns mm-hmm. that we've gotten in terms of, like, preseason play and the regular season game that we have with her new spot. I would just keep an eye on Ariel Atkins as, like, as part of the wing gets love group. Because she's just been kind of insane off the ball defensively and has been very good on ball as well. And the Sparks clearly set out this year, say, what we did last year defensively, that will never happen again. NECA, get over here. Ariel Atkins, get over here. And so, and when we think about the perimeter players that generally get love in these kind of conversations, it's normally going to be like high stock numbers. Who's getting your steals? Who's getting your blocks, et cetera? There is lead the league in steals potential for Ariel Atkins, especially with how the Sparks want to defend. And so I would just keep it. That's more like dark horse among the wing group, but I would keep an eye on the Ariel Atkins case, because it'll be easy to, similar to the NECA conversation, easy to connect the dots to, like, hey, the defense got better. They're not getting beat on drives like they were last year. Ariel Atkins is defending number one. So let's give her the credit type beat. Like, that pathway is very easy for me to kind of map out.
Understood. Understood. What about some dark horses, Nikias? What are some people where it's like, this could be a thing if X, Y, and Z takes place?
Okay, so we once again start with the Indiana Fever, who were, in 2024, a very bad defense. Last year, they were a solid defense, pretty big jump. Aaliyah Boston was in the all-defense mix last season. Not out of the realm of possibility that she takes another leap on that end. And just in general, a five that can move the way that she does, can get up to the level as often and as effectively as she does, can mix in some late switches, protects the rim at a pretty high level as well. Like, there's just a level of defensive versatility that she has. And if the Fever go from, I think they were seventh in defense rating last year, they go from seventh to fourth. And it is a similar bit to last year, to where the defense just performs worse when Aaliyah Boston's on the bench. I think you can map out a case for Aaliyah Boston. So I would keep an eye on her on the fringes. Angel Reese was somebody that I was already thinking about heading into the year. And if we're looking at what has happened through the first two games of the season for the Atlanta Dream, oh boy, Angel Reese has been incredibly good. And, like, she's had this potential. So, like, overall, this is not a new phenomenon. Like, we know how good she is in space in general. What is new, however, is when you think about, like, the stock creation, it's normally been steals for her. The fact that she is swatting shots the way that she is, and a lot of this is tied to she is playing the five more often. This is a conversation that we've had multiple times in the lead up to this season. Her being able to navigate this drop the way that she has been, Steve, has been impressive to me. And then you have the rim protection on top of that. And then naturally, like, she is ending possessions with rebounds on top of that. Hey, man, like, she's in the dark horse candidate by default, just because, like, Asia, AT, Breanna Stewart, always there. Based on the first two games of the season, which, very small sample, like, she should be in that top group for what we've seen so far this year. So, like, if she sustains that, she is absolutely going to be a favorite for this award. And then the other person mm-hmm. I would add, who hasn't had the best start to the season, if we're looking at what we have so far, but someone that I was just thinking about heading in, Alana Smith was the co-defensive player of the year last year, and the Wings brought her in and brought her in on the contract she did to help balance out what was a dreadful defense last season. And so if the Wings have a similar jump that we saw from the Fever, again, 2024, they were towards the bottom of the league. 2025, they were hovering around average. If the Wings see a similar jump, I think Atlanta Smith is going to get a lot of that credit. And again, through two games, you need better and more consistent from Atlanta Smith than what we've gotten. But like the talent is absolutely there. So like I don't think these first two games are a precursor to she's going to have a bad defensive season or anything like that. So like broadly speaking, I think Atlanta Smith should be in the dark horse conversation. Because if the Wings take a jump, I think she's going to be the biggest reason why.
Nice. I love that. And I think it'll be interesting to see what guard defenders emerge as the season goes on. But there are a lot of bigs who can play defense in this league. And so I am intrigued by what that could look like going forward. Let's talk about the rookie of the year, Nekias. And this is a fun one. We had a highly decorated class, very talented, deep class. A lot of teams expected them to contribute. And I think it was fascinating to kind of do this early on because preseason, you could kind of have a little bit more discussion to a degree because, okay, what's it look like? Could it be like an Olivia Miles? Who's going to be loud to start the season? Who's going to have an impact for their team? What's that going to look like? I think for sure there are two people that you could probably take a pen and write their names down as far as where they will be in this race at some point. They'll be in the top three. And I think it starts with the impact of Olivia Miles. Pretty clear night and day from the start of the season what Olivia Miles contributes within the Minnesota Lynx context as far as being able to get downhill, being able to make reads, being able to have a command this early. Like, that's not usually what happens with young guards in the W. So I think we can probably agree on that, right?
Yeah. No. I think heading in, just kind of projecting who's going to have the role, who's going to have the minutes, like Olivia Miles is going to be a favorite kind of by default. And so now we get the opening of the season. It's like, oh, this is 21-8 in the opener, and they almost won that game. And then you do win last night. And Olivia Miles, again, fun mix of drives and playmaking. So, like, now we have proof of concept. There's like, oh, this, hey, she's probably going to be not just a favorite. She may just be the favorite. But, again, we have 40-plus games to go. So, it's going to be fun tracking, like, does she run away with it? Does she hit a rookie wall? Does someone else emerge, et cetera? But, like, yeah, Olivia Miles is going to be there. Who's going to be the second person for you? Because you mentioned there's going to be two that are going to be in the pen.
Well, the other name, just as far as volume goes, starting from the preseason, hasn't stopped since. Flauje Johnson, the aggression that she has displayed consistently for Seattle, which, by the way, that Seattle Storm group just guards and wings and power to do things. And Flauje's ability to just kind of get up and down in transition, the drives of pop, pick and roll, it's cool. I got a drop. I can go ahead and get downhill, get to a one-hand finish. If I'm open from three, I'm going to let it fly. You have to deal with me in different ways. I'm playing confident, and I'm trying to defend my tail off on the other end. So I think just from the role perspective, the idea of it, like, it's going to be hard to deny what Flauje is going to contribute throughout the season for a Storm team that's looking to re-identify who they are. And so her ability to get downhill, get those paint touches, be aggressive, and just like, hey, it doesn't matter. I'm playing fearless offensively. That's something I think is going to speak volumes throughout the season.
Okay, I think that's fair. And I think we are aligned in that, like, those two are the easiest mix of talent plus opportunity to put together the stats to bring a rookie of the year case together. I think the all rookie discussion is going to be a more fun one than rookie of the year generally, because they're just going to be a lot of rookies. I think they're going to be playing big minutes this season. So that part is going to be fun. Not going to do all rookie teams projections today, but that is going to be interesting. I think beyond those two, Steve, I'm in such a headlock because there are a lot of talented rookies this season. And I'm just trying to wrap my head around, okay, how much are y'all actually going to be playing? Who is starting? Who's like high minute reserve? Because there are players missing on some of these respective teams. And I just don't know how to project that portion of the program, which is why, again, I'm excited for us to be able to kind of track this throughout the year. Because you look at, you know, the regular season opener for the Phoenix Mercury, Jovana Nokic comes out and it's three after three after drive after three. And it's like, oh, snap. Game two, she is coming off the bench because the Mercury were adding back to their rotation. And like, they still have not gotten Monika Koamakani yet. And so for me, it's just like, no, I don't think Nokic is going to be a starter as they get healthier and their players come back from their overseas commitment, things like that. But because of the skill set, the way that she fits alongside Alyssa Thomas and accentuates her talents for that matter, and her own scoring aggression and her ability to hold up defensively, I do still anticipate this is going to be like 20 plus minutes a game, even if she is coming off the bench. And in that case, I think she deserves to be in that top group. And I think it also just kind of leads me to a general question, Steve, that we dabble in on the podcast from time to time. But rookie of the year generally goes to good rookie on bad team that gets a lot of opportunity, a lot of stats. the rookies that can fit in on teams that are actively trying to win or in like legit title contention, that is not an easy thing to do. And so I kind of wonder for you, how do you balance that portion of it? Or does that factor in for you at all?
I mean, I think rookie of the year, just evaluating overall impact to a degree. And for some people, it can be like being loud, like the two names that we listed at the start. For some, it could be growth over the course of the year, or maybe you start one way, you get a lot better, and you're a whole problem as the season develops. And it could be every single night you play, you are playing for a good team, and you're impacting them and helping them win. And so I think there's a mix there. I think there's room for the volume to kind of take over, but there's also room to be impactful. And so some of the names I was thinking about, like in my head, okay, what do we talk about with Gabriela Jaquez if the Sky have success, right? And I think to me, that's an underrated player as far as it doesn't feel loud what she does, but it is entirely solid conceptually on both ends of the floor. As far as I'm going to do my job defensively, I'm going to be in the right spot, I'm going to stunt recover, I'm going to be active. Offensively, I can cut, I can drive, I got a little bit of a handle, I got some juice, I can get in transition. So if the Sky have success and she has that blend consistently, does that lead to a case that maybe you didn't expect to a degree? That's kind of where my brain goes. She plays
in juice. I think that is true. I think that is more than fair. Like, she is also someone that I had jotted down on my list for players that I'd be considering for something like this to have a pathway to making these cases. In a similar bit, Lauren Betts coming off the bench right now. But does she ultimately earn her way into the starting lineup as the season progresses? Whether that is like, I am just playing so well, you kind of have to put me in the starting lineup, or like Shakira Austin, as good as she is, she does have like the health history. Does something like that happen? Does that open up the door for more responsibility for Lauren Betts? Like, there's going to be a pathway there. And even if she does just come off the bench all year, the prospect of Lauren Betts just kind of mashing second unit bigs all year, like, it gets kind of funny. And if, again, very early sample so far, if we're just legit getting like hockey subs from Sidney Johnson with this Mystics group, like the on-off stuff could get funny. Maybe even in favor of Lauren Betts this year if she plays well enough. And so you would have that feather in the cap too. So like the Lauren Betts case is going to be interesting in terms of I am filling in a role now, but I don't know how it's going to evolve over the year. Hey, Pauline Astier for the New York Liberty, Steve. I have enjoyed the juice that she has played with so far this year. While some of these points go, while Sabrina is out in particular. But like even with that, you're going to get Sabrina back at some point. You're going to get Leonie Feebish. That kind of alters like just the overall perimeter room. So I'm just curious to see what her minute is going to look like. But hey, the drives, the shooting, the playmaking blend, I am kind of in on her being good. And then in terms of I am impacting a good team, I'm excited to see what this Raven Johnson season is going to be. Especially when you talk about someone that can impact things defensively the way she does. Like, it's going to be, I think, reminiscent to, like, the Monika Koamakani case that I was making last year. Not for rookie of the year overall, but just, like, all rookie stuff. Like, I can play make. I can do the little things. Also, I am an all-defense caliber defender already. And, like, these things kind of matter. That is not an easy thing for a rookie to establish. So, like, we will see how the season progresses. But would not surprise me at all if, like, Raven puts herself in these conversations. If she's, like, closing lineups with some of the three guard stuff that people can get into. Like, it can get a lot of fun, I think.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the names that we kind of toss back and forth comes down to minutes, comes down to role. And so Lauren Betts, they had a strong preseason. They have a lot of talented bigs. So, okay, how many minutes are going to really be there? What's that impact going to look like overall? Because I think there's a lot of things you can do with her in the post as a hub. There's a lot of things. Georgia Amore is another name to look out for if we're talking Mystics because of the responsibility she'll have as a point guard. What's up?
I was just going to ask, is that the Mystics guard we should be talking about in this discussion?
We got to respect Georgia Amore at some point. Who are you trying to bring up?
I was just going to say, like, hey, her versus Roy Harmon could be interesting this year. That was the only thing I was tossing out.
You already started this. It's fine. We'll get there. Shout out to Roy Harmon. Give me that to me. Great energy. I know what you're going.
I'm just asking questions.
Kiki Rice's role, what's that look like? I think there's some growth opportunity for Kiki Rice over the season, but okay, you're behind some guards. How many minutes are you going to play? What's that going to look like? AZ Fudd, what's the role look like overall? Think can be very impactful for the wings. Think the situation set up for success. What's that look like over the course of the season? So I think there are some question marks as far as there are some names that I think can play at a high enough level to really, hey, this is pretty easy, but got to see it happen. That is the drawback of having seen two or three games early. It's like, okay, probably yelled about this 5 days ago, but it's a little bit different now. Let's talk about your favorite award, though.
Ah, yes. Sixth
player of the year. I am here with multiple players on the same team specifically to annoy you. So who you got, guys?
I think teams should have reps, Steve. Okay, so I think early favorites for me heading into the year, and again, we have like two games to react to. So like one of the names is probably like, well, that looks bad right now, but we have an entire season to go with. But the names I was thinking about heading into the season, Kennedy Carter for the Las Vegas Aces. She is just going to have a lot of scoring opportunity off the bench for that team, especially while Dana Evans is out. So there's even more room for her to do that. And through the first two games, she is getting buckets. So we will see if that sustains. But I think that's just a name that makes sense for this conversation, especially since it is historically, does your team win games? Do you average points? If yes, you are a candidate. And again, I don't, for, out of the interest of time, I'm not going to do my sixth player of the year rant this time around, but Kennedy Carter is going to be a candidate. I think Cam Brink is going to be a candidate. Yeah, you're welcome, Steve. I think Cam Brink, shaky opener against the Aces notwithstanding, I do think Cam Brink is going to be a candidate for sixth player of the year.
Hey, no, I'm going to yell at the internet real quick and you keep going. She played 8 minutes.
Okay.
Let's let her play some basketball, please. Come on. Come on. Everyone relax. She's very good. Come on.
She is good. I will say she would probably play more basketball if she did not commit to fouls.
No, no, Nakai. No, Nakai. She came in at 121 in the third quarter. Don't get that off. Continue with your
Okay. All right. Fine, fair enough. Okay. The one portion of the rant that I will do, and it's going to be like a couple of sentences, I will say I wish defense mattered for these awards a little bit more than they do. I think you can provide impact off the bench for being a good defender. It annoyed me during the Leonie Phoebe's rookie season, to where it's like, hey, she could probably just be sixth player of the year based on what she's doing on both ends of the floor and how important she is to the Liberty context. I would imagine when the Liberty have their full assortment, there is a chance that Leonie Phoebus is just coming off the bench. If it is Sabrina, Benaja Laney Hamilton, Satu Sabli, Brianna Stewart, Jonquil Jones, like if that is the starting lineup. So honestly, it's probably more accurate to just put Liberty rep in here, because if Leonie starts, then I can make the same case for Benaja Laney Hamilton that just could come in and wreck stuff defensively and knock down shots. But either way, between Leonie Phoebus and Benaja Laney Hamilton, one of the two, I think, is going to factor in pretty heavily into this sixth player of the year conversation. And then I have to say the name of Emma Chakova, Steve, who could also factor into like some rookie of the year stuff. Well, I guess less rookie of the year stuff because Olivia Miles is there and she's starting. And I would imagine she just gets the pup for that, and rightfully so. If Emma Chakova is coming off the bench all year, which she probably will be, considering how Nia Coffey started the year, you have Natasha Howard there, and then once Fee comes back, she's obviously going to be soaking up a bunch of minutes at the four. I think she's going to be largely pigeonholed as a reserve. And if so, she is going to put the ball on the floor. She's going to get downhill. She's going to make passing decisions. She's going to screen her tail off. She's going to protect the rim. And I think this Lynx team is going to rack up wins this year. And so I think she's going to factor into this award. Like, I think she is just very good at basketball, and Cheryl Reeve did a tremendous job of bringing her in. So, like, those would probably be my early favorites right now. Is that fair? Is there anyone that you would add to, like, the favorites list that I didn't mention?
No, I mean, I think with how Kennedy Carter's played to start the season and the role that she would have for the Aces, it's up there. I think preseason I had Maddie Segrist as a name to watch with her contributions early on. But, I mean, it's hard to deny Kennedy Carter's ability to get downhill and how important that is for the Aces, especially juicing, driving kick, getting paint touches, being able to come off the bench. Like, we had to defend Jackie Young and Asia Wilson, and wait, there's Jewel Lloyd and Kennedy Carter. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's not necessarily ideal. So it's a good fit as far as just kind of being able to, you go do what you do in that context. So I think that's probably one of the ones I go with. Maddie Segrist is the name I had down. Tina Pau-Pau is someone that I would salute and highlight as far as like, hey, are you understanding how aggressive and assertive this player is for a team that is playing pretty well? That's someone I was thinking of. I was in agreement with a lot of your names, so won't hang there too long. Jade Melbourne is someone that I am keeping an eye on in Seattle. Again, like, you could pick a Storm guard off the bench because they're all playing pretty well, but hey, I'm getting after it. I'm getting buckets. You got to deal with it.
No, I think that's fair. Like, I struggled with, because, like, in a vacuum, I would love to say, like, Anissa Morrow, I'm keeping an eye on this. Or, one, to your point, one of the Storm guards. Like, historically speaking, like, the Sixth Player of the Year award winner has just come from playoff teams. And that's where I'm just like, I don't know. They may be individually good enough to warrant consideration, but I don't know if they're going to win enough for like the voters to consider them the way they probably should be considered. Mm-hmm. And so like that was my only like hang up with players with like those kind of players on those teams. In terms of dark horses, you mentioned Maddie Seegers for the Dallas Wings, and I think that is fair. I feel like Isaiah James is very early on establishing herself as like the best reserve on the Dallas Wings with her drives, her shot creation, her annoying, how annoying she is on defense, complimentary. And so if she's just going to be this, like she may move from dark horse to like top tier candidate by the end of the year. But like at the very least, I'm keeping an eye on Isaiah James in Dallas. Again, not going to hang too long. I mentioned Rayva Johnson if she's coming off the bench for the Indiana Fever. She may be part of some closing lineups. The two-way impact is going to be there. Gabriella Jaquez, same idea. And like that also just kind of leans into the other tier that I have, aptly named, how many starts will they have? And this is where I have the Atlanta Dream as a concept, because I think individually it's easy to map out a case for Nas Hillman once Bree Jones comes back, but we don't know when Bree Jones is coming back. Or Tahina Pow-Pow, who, if she is aggressive and she's knocking down shots, as we saw in the opener, she could be part of closing lineups, et cetera. But like I also had the back of my mind, will we get to a point to where Tahina Pow-Pow just replaces Jordan Cannon in the starting lineup? And like, what does that do to her sixth player of the year case? So like I was confused there. Janelle Salon, who is shooting the leather off the ball, and should probably be an early favorite based on what we've seen so far. But because of how important her scoring and shooting is, I also just in the back of my mind just feel like she's going to end up starting at some point, which would thus hit her, you know, her case, because she won't be getting reserve games. And then it's a similar bit with Lauren Betts. Like, how long will she be coming off the bench? Is where I'm just like, okay, I don't know what to do with this type B.
Yeah, those are some of the names. Yeah, very good. That. Great stuff. Wonderful stuff. Get those moves in. Let's talk most improved player with the time that we have remaining in this program. The always funny, always excellent, who makes a leap, are you good, were you good already, did you get a lot better type of deal. What are the names that you had down on paper, Nekias Duncan?
Yes. So I have four categories for the most improved candidates, Steve. The early favorites for me, I have Rekia Jackson's name down. I have Bridget Carlton's name down. I have Carla Late's name down. Like, I think there's just young players, skill development, plus more opportunity that just kind of makes sense. My dark horses, I am keeping... that is too fire. And so we'll see which one of them emerges as, like, the candidate for this. But those are the three that I'm looking at primarily. The dark horses that I have. Natasha Mack. Hey, it looks like she is just going to be starting all year this year. And if the finishing is better, in addition to what she already does defensively... that impact is going to be loud, or at the very least it should be, because we collectively just do not do a good enough job of talking about the Phoenix Mercury, apparently, like our podcast does. But, you know, it should lead to a lot of noise for what Natasha Mack is and how she's grown. Ray Burrell, she looks like she's going to be the starter for the Los Angeles Sparks. At the very least, she's getting early cracks at it. More opportunities she's earned at. Wasn't the best opener, but we got more games to go. Curious to see what the two-way impact lands there. Your favorite group, Steve, the star/all-star leaps that can get into these conversations. I would keep an eye on a statistical bump / general improvement from Aaliyah Boston. If she goes from, she was like 15-8-4 last year. If this is like 17-8-4 this year with better defense, there we have two other players in league history that have averaged 17-8-4 for a season. That is Candace Parker and Satu Sabli. And I think in the year that Satu Sabli did it, she won most improved. So I just keep an eye. Mm-hmm. If we're looking at stars that can make jumps, Aaliyah Boston seems prime for that. And in a similar vein, more opportunity for Gabby Williams. If we do see an offensive leap in addition to the defense, we may see some stuff on that front. And then the you're getting minutes now category, to where, like, I already thought you had some talent, but, like, you are now on a team in which you are just getting more opportunity. Emily Inksler, I am excited to watch her unleashed in Portland. Letitia, me here. It goes, that is three fire. Like, hey, this is the bit with an expansion team. You just get a whole bunch of players that may not have been heavily in the rotation elsewhere, and I just get opportunity. And Letitia Mee here in Golden State, the drives are forever interesting to me on that end. And if she is able to hold up defensively, like, I think there's just going to be a role there for her. So I will keep an eye on that front. So those are the players that I was thinking about, Steve. What say you on the most improved front?
Well, you know what I like to do since people have taken this award and made it a different thing. Let's crack the knuckles. Let's have some fun. Let's talk about Maureen Yohannes, who is having a season play bien. It's happening right now. Sabrina obviously has not been around, but Maureen is taking full advantage of the opportunities to be an absolute monster in pick and roll, take all the shots you want, make all the passes you need, and continue to play. So if Maureen does this over the course of the season, I can't imagine you would ignore Maureen Yohannes being a very good basketball player and getting better at it in the W. I have a name for you specifically. For you. For you.
What we got?
Marina Mabry.
You want to talk about your all-star leaps. You want to talk about becoming a superstar with this award. Give it to Marina Mabry with what she could do in Toronto with that time and space if she continues to average a whole ton of points. So think about that. Wakia Jackson probably is where I would land early on. Just a good mix for Chicago. Good opportunity. Able to get downhill. Able to drive. Can use her in different ways. My biggest question, is there a chance your year two rule gets broken this year? Is there a chance that your year two, well, they were rookies last year, we can't give them most approved, does it get broken? Do we look at Anissa Morrow and say, hey, you got a whole lot better inside and out? Do we look at Sonia Citron, if she's potentially a top scorer, and say, hey, you made a leap, since you want to talk about Aaliyah Boston? Do we give a shout to Camilla Cardoso if she's elevated by Skylar Diggins being there and the pick and rolls there and the double-doubles there? What does that look like? Is there a way your year two rule snaps, brother?
In a literal sense, yeah. Like, I think this is what, would this be, no, Camilla's in the Angel draft, so that would, what, year three, I think, for her. But I think, to your point about Sonia Citron in particular, is where I think it gets super interesting. Just because she was an all-star last year, and so she would literally fit into, like, the all-star leap category on that front. If the Drives are going to hit like this, and if the Mystics are a surprising playoff team, and not just doing, like, the first half bit from last year before they traded Brittany Sykes, yada, 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 that gets interesting. I think for the year two players in particular, like, it would have to be, like, super loud for that to be the bit. And so I do wonder if we get a loud enough leap for Sonia Citron to, like, break that proverbial rule. But I would leave the door open. Like, I don't think it's egregious. I'll put it that way.
Sweet. I just want to sneak Camilla in there.
That's fair. That's fair. Like, if you didn't have Camilla, I was going to ask you a Camilla question as we both brought up Rakia Jackson. But naturally, this should be a better context for Camilla as well. So, like, I am glad that you brought Camilla up. Is there anyone else you want to shout out here?
Not at the moment. I wanted to keep it at context, right? And speaking of context, let's talk about Coach of the Year. And the coaches that are going to have their team succeeding and how we view this category. And I want to start this with an early, quick apology to Natalie Nicasse. Because if you're not aware, and I understand maybe it shouldn't be this way, but the last time we got back-to-back winner Coach of the Year in the W was pre-2000. Dan Chancellor did that. So ever since then, did you win Coach of the Year last year? Yes. Is your team playing well this year? Yes. Back of the line. So, I would be intrigued if the Golden State Valkyries play well enough to where Nat could just disrupt that, keep that in there. But I would give an apology because I think she's done a great job in Golden State and probably deserves some pub. Now, where do you land on this award this year? Because I think we got some potential candidates. I think it kind of falls within some regions. Where do we go?
Oh boy, I also have some subsections here. I have the where did this come from group. So team that was bad in the standings last year, better than people expected. That's how a lot of this ends up being decided. And as you know, Steve, personally, and long-term dunkers know, I do not like that being the foundation of a case. Like, I think Coach of the Year should be about evaluating what these teams did or comparing, like, what they did differently to years prior and, like, actually talking about the basketball of it versus building a case on media being wrong before the year started. But neither here nor there. In that first category, Jose Fernandez seems pretty prime for this if the Wings take a leap. Tyler Marsh in Chicago seems pretty prime for this if the Sky take a leap. Sidney Johnson in Washington if the Mystics take a leap and they make the playoffs. And then the kind of wild card in this group is Cheryl Reeve. Because naturally, with no Nafisa Collier and losing Alana Smith and Jessica Shepherd and Atisha Hydeman and Ejanae Carrington and on and on and on, it's like, well, surely this is just going to be a lean year for the Minnesota Lynx. I think they're going to be good. And that opens up, at least narratively, wow, we didn't think the Lynx were going to be all this. Now, on this podcast, I've been screaming, yeah, the Lynx are probably still going to be good, but I do think that pathway is available to Cheryl Reeve.
You're not alone.
You're not. Oh, no, I'm not saying I'm the only person that is a Lynx leader. Trust me on that front. But generally speaking, like, I think that narrative is going to exist for Cheryl Reeve in a way that it generally does not, because her teams are always just good. But that'd be that group. The good to great group for me, were you a good team? Is there something noticeably different that you are now jumped up in the standings to another degree? I'll keep an eye on Stephanie White in Indiana. Like, there's going to be a lot of noise about Caitlin off ball and things like that. The empowerment of Leah Boston is going to loom large in this one as well. And then Nate Tibbetts in Phoenix. Which, hey, who are these players? They're still good. How did they do that? Which, again, annoys me. Let's talk about what the Mercury are actually doing on the floor, but whatever. Nate Tibbs is probably going to fall in that group as well. And then the great to oh my goodness group, that is where Chris DeMarco can come in. A lot of talent for this Liberty group, but if they look demonstrably different and they win 30-plus games, I think he's going to have a pretty strong pathway to this award. This would be similar to the Becky Hammon case in 2022, where the Aces were very good the year before, had very obvious offensive limitations. She comes in 2022. She comes in 2022. Hey, this offense looks a lot different. The Aces are winning still. Becky Hammon, you are the coach of the year. I think a similar like concept could work for Chris DeMarco in New York.
Understood. Let's talk about a similar concept. What if Becky Hammon gets it this year? Because the Aces end up just being very, very good and don't stop being good. Could that open the door for Becky Hammon to once again be recognized as a tremendous coach? Very curious there. Looking at your list, it's human nature. I think there's a lot of time people watch basketball and they may have thought a team would be bad and they may not have seen everything that made them good. And so coaching, that's why they get the credit. That's how it works. I think it's interesting if the Fever or the Mercury have a certain level of success due to Stephanie White and Nate Tibbetts climb up the ranks, Cheryl Reeve in this Minnesota context, if they are surprising pre-Fee and then Fee comes back and they get back to business, I think you keep an eye on that. I had in my notes, this has become a Sky Dream Wings Mystics type beat where, hey, one of you was not what we thought we would be. Good job. Thanks. Salute there. But I'm intrigued as far as some of those go. It's going to be hard for an expansion. I think it's going to be hard for an expansion coach in this specific W to kind of rise up to this level. There's so many teams. But, I'm keeping an eye on it. I think if you had asked me a month ago, I probably would have said Stephanie White, Nate Tibbetts, Becky Hammon. But I think Cheryl Reeves is going to knock on some doors. It's going to be fun to watch.
I got you. I think to quickly answer the Becky question before we officially close this thing out, I was thinking hard about what a Becky Hammon case would look like. Because again, in 2022, it was very much, we are shifting this offense dramatically from what it was last year. There's a very tangible thing with the Aces winning. In 2023, when the Aces win, I think 34-6, and we're literally the greatest regular season team we've seen since the Houston Comets, Becky Hammon's finished fourth in coach of the year. And I'm just how did we get here? And so thinking about this upcoming season, I'm just what is the narrative for the Becky Hammon case this year? Cause just from a pure coach perspective, yes, she is the best or the second best coach in basketball. With how this award is generally voted on, I'm just is there going to be an overachievement factor for the Aces? I don't think so. Is there going to be a dramatic schematic shift for the Aces? I don't think so. We're going to talk about some of the more subtle stuff. And so I'm just what would a Becky case look like based on how the award is voted on?
There's a little bit of super team tax that some coaches play. We've seen Sandy Brondello and Becky both suffer at that, where, hey, your team was supposed to be good. Doesn't really matter that you made it a lot better. Would you please step to the side? And that's not fair. But if you're talking about the case for Becky, winning would help. And two, how do you feel about the Aces defense?
It's kind of where at least two games. It's good?
What if it's good and they win? There's your case.
That would be fun. Okay. But hey, listen, there you go. Lance.
Realest guy in the room. How you doing?
Okay. Well done, Steve. Thank you, Steve, for all of the analysis and the bars. And thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel for all our playoff commentary right now. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports main YouTube channel for all the W content. You can follow me on socials at Nikias NBA. Follow Steve on socials at Steve Jones 20. And with that, we will catch y'all later.